What are the most important games on Tennessee's schedule for 2023? The football schedule. Of course, you got the Alabama, the Georgias, the Floridas, your big three. A&M's on the schedule. Kentucky comes at a critical time. What are my top three most important games for that season? That and more, a part of Twitter Tuesday, and a whole lot more here on a Tuesday. Locked On Vols.
You are Locked On Vols, your daily podcast on the Tennessee Volunteers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, everybody, and welcome into it. Tuesday, Locked On Vols. I'm your host, Eric Kane. So glad that you elected to hang out with me here today. And really appreciate the support, watching on YouTube, subscribing to the channel, and liking this video, as always. This episode is brought to you in part by FanDuel Sportsbook, the official sportsbook of Locked On. Make every moment more. Visit FanDuel.com/LockedOn to get started today. Got a couple of Twitter Tuesday questions, a little mailbag here in segment one and segment two. Ross Jackson, the host of Locked On Saints, Locked On NFL, does a whole lot with the Locked On Network. He was down in Mobile, and he has an inkling. He wants a quarterback for the University of Tennessee. That'd be Hendon Hooker to be drafted by the Saints. We'll discuss that and more from the Senior Bowl. And then in segment number three, ESPN releases way too early top newcomers to each roster for the football season. Who did ESPN elect to be the top newcomer from Tennessee? We'll tell you all that and more right here on the show. So without further ado, let's go ahead and get into it. Hit up some questions. Only two today. Didn't get a whole lot of submissions, but really it's two that I can kind of expand on. So not only two, but the two that we're going to bring on the show. Jay Grass, he chimes in and wanted to let me know that he enjoys listening to the podcast, and I said I appreciate it. But then he was like, hey, look ahead at the thread from when I asked you a question about this time last year. And I went back and we were discussing the top three games on the schedule of most importance. And he thought it was funny because he and I both agreed that the Alabama game wouldn't really be characterized as an important game because it would most likely be an L, a loss, right? And well, look how wrong I was. Look how wrong a lot of people were, right? Because Tennessee beat Alabama. So it's fun to go back and laugh at that. But he wants to say, actually, now that I think about it, I do have a question. What do you think the top three most important games are for this year? Would love to know. Man, I appreciate it. Thanks so much for tuning into the show. When you look at the schedule for 2023, it starts off at the top with Virginia and Nashville at Nissan Stadium. Then you go to Austin Peay, Florida, UTSA, South Carolina, the bye week. A&M, Alabama, those are your two West opponents. Kentucky, UConn, Missouri, Georgia, and then Vanderbilt. Pretty much an underwhelming schedule with your marquee non-conference game, being Virginia at Nissan Stadium in Nashville. That should have been the BYU game in Provo. But when you kind of look at it, I think the conversation will always start, right, with your big three. Like I mentioned, the cold open, the Floridas, the Georgias, the Alabamas. I will go ahead and, again, it's the value of the holder, right? It's depending on who you ask. My number three most important game, I'll go Georgia Saturday, November the 18th, because that could decide who wins the SEC East. You know, we'll see. Of course, Georgia's got to reload a little bit. It had to reload this past year, and it won a national championship again. But no more Stetson Bennett, a quarterback at least, and a lot of guys on that defensive front. You know, South Carolina's continuing to retool, and they actually had a pretty decent season. They beat Tennessee. Of course, we know that. They're going to have a say in that. Florida's going to try to bounce back a little bit. But I'm going to say Georgia. I'll say Georgia, one, because it's part of the big three, two, because it's late in the season, and three, that very well could be for the SEC East Championship, likely, or potentially. So I'll say Georgia at number three. Number two, I will say Florida, because you just got on the winning side of that rivalry, right? Sure, you won in 2016, but before that, it was all the way back in 2004. Florida had won 16 of the last 17 games. You just got over that hump, and you want to start establishing, like, hey, Tennessee's here. Tennessee's not just going to be a win you can chuck up on the schedule every single year in the SEC if you're Florida. And for Tennessee continuing to try to take that step, your roster is still likely better than that of Florida's in terms of competitiveness. I would say number two would be Florida, because you want to start off on the good foot. You want to beat Virginia, which you likely will. You want to beat Austin Peay, which you will. You want to beat Florida. If that happens, you're 3-0. UTSA will not be a layover. But when you win that game, you'll be 4-0, and then you have a big-time 4-0 matchup against South Carolina, a team that you desperately need to avenge that horrendous loss in Columbia this past season. So if you win that game, you're 5-0 heading into the bye week, and I think the most challenging game will be Florida in that stretch of five games to begin the season. Then you got the task of taking on A&M, Alabama, Kentucky, and so on and so forth. So number two, I will say Florida, because you just got to win. You need to pile up another win, and you need to finish that first half of the schedule 5-0 before the bye, and I think that's the most challenging game. And then number one, I will say Alabama. You know, why not? Tennessee beat Alabama last year. I understand a lot happened in that game. You had an all-world performance from both Hendon Hooker and, of course, Jalin Hyatt. I understand Alabama missed a field goal there that could have won it towards the end. I get all that. But you beat Alabama. What's to say you can't beat Alabama again? Alabama's losing its all-world quarterback in Bryce Young, who was phenomenal. You guys know my thoughts on Will Anderson Jr., losing him, losing that type of star power on each side of the football. A new offensive coordinator in Tommy Reese of Notre Dame. A new defensive coordinator in Kevin Steele, former Tennessee head coach. I had to throw that in there. You guys will like that. It's a very new-look regime. Of course, you have Nick Saban. And because you have Nick Saban, you know, things will go well because you do have him still. But it's a very new regime in Tuscaloosa for this upcoming season. Take advantage of that if you're Tennessee. Sure, you got a new quarterback too. You got some new pieces on offense and defense. That's part of the, you got a new OC. That's part of college football, right? But take advantage of that. So I'll say my number one game would be Alabama. Most important game. We can talk and discuss and nitpick this as the offseason goes on. But right now, my way too early top three most important games for Tennessee would be number three, Georgia, number two, Florida, and number one, Alabama. Jay Grass, appreciate the question there, and it is funny to kind of go back and look and how me and you and everybody else is kind of just counting Alabama as a loss, because again, it's been Alabama. The other one I want to get into here is from Brian, and this is more of a comment, and this came after the Wednesday loss to Florida last week. Again, the AP came out, Tennessee was ranked number six this week after going 1-1 last week. You can make the argument they should be ranked five ahead of Texas, but it is what it is. It's not that big of a deal if you ask me. Number one, this is from Brian. You know if Tennessee is going to lose within the first 10 minutes every single time. Number two, and this is why excitement wanes and trust is low. Barnes is consistently unable to make changes to manufacture points. Great teams don't have the floor Tennessee has every single year. They don't lose 83-85 to a red-hot team. They lose badly. I don't know what that says, and no floor. Great teams have a floor. Brian, I agree with some of the stuff you said right there, man. What I would say is the line we say, great teams don't have the floor Tennessee has every single year. You know why Tennessee has that floor? It's because you have Rick Barnes, because you have a good coach who can recruit better than anybody has ever recruited here at Tennessee, because you have a culture, better culture than any Tennessee team has likely had over the course of 6 years, however long he's been here. That is why Tennessee has an incredibly high floor. But to your point, I mean, yeah, sure, we can discuss how, you know, Tennessee goes through these offensive lulls this year and in years past. We can discuss how Tennessee loses badly. It's not 83-85, like you mentioned, to a red-hot team. You know, that's warranted a conversation. My biggest takeaway from this, or at least the biggest thing that I would disagree with, is Tennessee has those floors, those high floors, because of Rick Barnes. He puts them in position to have that. So, nonetheless, Tennessee did bounce back. And like I said on yesterday's show, it wasn't pretty. Good Lord, it took a couple years off our lives. But Tennessee did pick up a quad one win against Auburn. That is considered a quad one win. And that was some elite defensive play. But, man, I don't think anybody ever wants to see that type of offensive production from two teams out on the court ever again. All right, guys, appreciate it. Jay Grass and Brian, thanks for chiming in this week for a little mailbag show. We'll get into more of those next week. If you guys have any more questions, we'll dive into that, of course. But before we get into my conversation with Jackson Ross of Ross Jackson, excuse me, of Locked On Saints, I want to remind you guys about a proud sponsor of this show and of Locked On Podcast Network, and that is Built Bar. Looking for a delicious treat but don't want all the fat and the calories, then you got to try Built Bar. What makes Built Bar so good? Well, for starters, they're covered in 100% real chocolate. Again, that's right. That is real chocolate. They come in unbelievable flavors like cookies and cream, peanut butter brownie, and coconut almond. I'm not sure how Bill does it, but these bars taste like a candy bar while maintaining incredible things for you. What's better is they are healthy. Only 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, and a whopping 17 grams of protein. And now you don't have to wait around to order your Built Bars at Built.com anymore. For years, we've been telling you to do that. But now you can go to your local Walmart or your Sam's Club. So you can head on over to your nearest Walmart today. Walk to the pharmacy section and grab yourself a box of Built Bars. You can pick up a 4-bar box of cookies and cream, double chocolate, and coconut puffs. Or if you're close to Sam's, run in, grab a 13-bar box with hit flavors, brownie batter, and churro. You can thank me later. Sam's Club, Walmart, and as always, it's at Built.com. Be the better you at Built.com. All right, guys, I want to thank you so much for making Locked On Vols your first listen each and every day. Go ahead and make sure you can check out the brand new podcast that's Locked On College Basketball. Basketball season is happening right now. Everything you need to know about college basketball, all in one place. Plus, you can hear from big-name experts, insiders, coaches, and players. That's Locked On College Basketball. It's available on YouTube and wherever you find your podcast. All right, I want to continue talking a little Senior Bowl down from Mobile, Alabama. And the guy that hired me and brought me to the Locked On Podcast Network, his name is Ross Jackson. He's the host of Locked On Saints, does Locked On NFL, does a whole lot of stuff. He's the technical coordinator for our company. Ross, appreciate it, man. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, man, absolute pleasure to be here. Thanks so much for taking the time to have me on. You know, I got a lot of respect for those Tennessee Volunteers over here covering the New Orleans Saints. So glad to be here with you, bud.
Again, like I always say, that pipeline from Knoxville to New Orleans and, you know, up to Pittsburgh, the two pipelines that work really well from you know, Tennessee to the NFL. So got to keep them strong. And kind of on that note, I know New Orleans is looking for a quarterback, and Hendon Hooker is not – he wasn't active in terms of physically active at the Senior Bowl this past week. But how do you think that he did in terms of answering questions and interviews and meeting with some coaches? What's been the buzz around Hendon Hooker in New Orleans and, you know, Hendon Hooker in terms of this draft process?
Yeah, he was one of the reasons that I went to Mobile. It was one of the bigger reasons for me being there, because I do think he would be a great fit in the New Orleans Saints offense. And I think he'd be a great fit anywhere he ends up landing, honestly. And so I spoke to a lot of scouts about him. I spoke to a couple of coaches as well. The New Orleans Saints quarterback coach, DJ Williams, the New Orleans Saints offensive assistant, DJ Williams, was serving as a Senior Bowl quarterback coach. And he was working with Hendon Hooker, not only in meetings, but, you know, throughout sort of the entire process. And the Saints, you know, really enjoyed, their interview and their time with Hendon Hooker. But that doesn't seem to be unique. It seems that everyone enjoyed their time and their interviews with Hendon Hooker, who continuously reminded them about the mental side and approach that he brings to the game and at quarterback. And in today's NFL, above the shoulders football, they call it, is incredibly important to a lot of scouts and a lot of offensive personnel in the National Football League. And so I think that he did a really great job showing that, hey, as the medicals continue to roll in, he's saying that he's going to be ready for training camp. He's focused on the mental side of the game. All of those things are positives, and Hendon Hooker's stock is reportedly on the rise. I don't know that he'll walk into the first round, but hey, a team at the bottom of the first round, like one I might happen to know very well, that's looking to get a fifth-year option on a quarterback, that could be a really nice spot for him to actually end up selected. But otherwise, I think a lot of folks look at him as somebody that's at least a top 100 selection.
Yeah, Ross, I asked Chris Gordy this the other day, but I mean, one of the big things going against Hendon Hooker is his age. I mean, he's 25 years old. He was in college football for a long time. Could that potentially hurt him? I know it depends on who you're asking, what team you're asking, but could that be a knock against him of maybe not being selected at the tail end of the first round or slotting back into the mid-second or maybe even, you know, later than that?
Yeah, like you mentioned, it kind of depends upon who you're asking, but if that's a knock against him, I'm just going to be completely frank with you. It's dumb. Like, there's no reason for this. This idea that a 25-year-old can't play quarterback in the NFL while we just watched Tom Brady retire at 73 is just absolutely nuts, right? And so, like, this whole idea that he's reached the ceiling of his development or something like that, I think the New Orleans Saints showed you when they took in an older Taysom Hill, turned him into a special teams player and then into a running back and into a tight end and into a quarterback, that players can develop over the course of that time. Now, somebody that's coming in and focusing on just developing in one position shouldn't have much of an issue doing so. If they have that ceiling available to them, they should be able to find it. And so what I like about him being as old as he is the maturity. And that's a position that you want maturity, you want composure. And I think maturity and composure are two words that absolutely sum up Hendon Hooker. If I was asked to come up with two words to describe him, those are probably two that I would pick. And so that's what's been on display over the course of the Senior Bowl week in Mobile, him being able to do those interviews and show exactly that. And that has been what's impressed teams and scouts over the course of that week.
Probably the guy that, you know, from Tennessee that garnered the most attention, maybe arguably, but by week's end, I would say it's probably Darnell Wright. He had a really, really strong week. He was American Offensive Lineman Practice Player of the Week, voted on by his peers. Won a whole lot of one-on-one sets. What did you see from Darnell Wright, and what is kind of the buzz with Darnell Wright down in Mobile, a guy that is just 21 years old and started, I want to say, 46 games, didn't, you know, in SEC play, didn't allow a sack in his last 19 games at Tennessee.
Yeah, that 40-plus game mark is a big one. Usually, if you see a college player that's played more than 35 games and has done it well, that is a big-time highlight for just about every position but running back. Running back would be the kind of a big exception there. But, you know, when you're looking at an offensive lineman, you want the most experience possible. And Wright absolutely brings that. Jeremy Fowler of ESPN talking about his connection potentially to the Pittsburgh Steelers as early as round one. I believe the Steelers hold the 17th pick overall. So there's some really, really great opportunities there for Darnell Wright. In terms of what I saw from him, I mean, look, both teams, the offensive lines absolutely dominated throughout the entire practice week, and he continued to play well too against the national team when it came to the actual live snaps and live reps on Saturday. And keep in mind, these guys show up, they do a team meeting on Monday, they practice 3 days, and then they do a walkthrough on Friday, and they're playing a game on Saturday. And so if you're coming in as an offensive lineman and you're understanding your run responsibilities, your lane responsibilities, your passing pass blocking responsibilities, that's all big time highlights. Again, above the shoulders football. And a big part of that too was also his ability to not only be able to stalemate players, but also read their leverage and make them beat themselves. And that's something that Wright did all throughout his collegiate career over the course of those 40 plus games. And he showed again in the Senior Bowl matchup.
Ross, another Tennessee player I want to ask about that was down in Mobile this past week is pass rusher Byron Young, kind of a tweener, 4-3 defensive end or stand up 3-4 outside backer. A guy that Mel Kiper Jr. as early as a couple of weeks ago, had him mocked as a first round pick, which is now that's the only one that I've seen in terms of having him as a first round pick. But I think he'll be a high draft pick. What did you like from Byron Young, and what are some of the things you heard about Tennessee's pass rusher?
Yeah, again, offensive line really dominated the defensive line all throughout the practice week, but he still had his flashes. He still won a couple of his reps. And remember, you'll see a lot of those reps be one-on-one reps, so you can kind of take those with a grain of salt, take them or leave them. But you look at the Senior Bowl game and what he was able to do, wrecking ball a bit in that game. And the thing that I liked about what he did in that game was not just what he showed you in terms of his ability to be a pass rusher. There was one point where he pushed an offensive lineman directly into the lap of Malik Cunningham, but there was also a situation in which Cunningham, moved the pocket, rolled to the outside, it was Jack Haner, moved the pocket, rolled to the outside, and Young, not being a part of that play anymore, watched a running back leak out. He ends up taking that running back and limiting that to just a 2-yard gain. So you saw him show a little bit of his, I'm just going to keep mentioning it, I guess, above the shoulders football, showing you what he could do on the mental side of the game of making that read, understanding, okay, the ball could potentially go there. I'm in this area. This is my responsibility. I got this taken care of. And he was able to get it taken care of. So you saw his bull rush ability, speed to power conversion, but you also saw a bit of that mental, that sort of football IQ out on the field as well.
It's kind of wild to think about. Tennessee is now having, Hendon Hooker, Darnell Wright, Byron Young, Jalen Hyatt, and four players who have been mentioned, rumored as being, potential first-round guys, which is just incredible. Now, all four of those guys will not be selected in the first round. Maybe not any of them will be selected in the first round, but I think that says a lot about where this Tennessee football program is now, back from, whenever Josh Heupel took over in January of 2021. Speaking of one of those players that he inherited and coached there for 1 year, who made his way to New Orleans last season as a second-round pick, Alante Taylor. How would you evaluate Alante Taylor's performance year one as a rookie in New Orleans?
Is magnificent good enough? I mean, the guy was outstanding. And it's funny because We weren't sure he was going to see the field his rookie year when he was originally drafted. We weren't even sure he was going to play corner. I know I was in the class of people that thought that maybe they would take advantage of his speed, his baseball experience, and put him at safety. Those are two things that the Saints like at that position. Instead, he got the opportunity to go out there and play corner due to some injuries and just absolutely balled out. He was one of those guys that had one of the lowest, even though he was one of the most frequently targeted players on a per snap average across the NFL, he was one of the people that brought in one of the lowest completion percentages, as well as one of the lowest NFL passer ratings as well, and was responsible for far more when it came to forced incompletions rather than completions over expected. So he did a really phenomenal job over the course of the 2022 season, and now the Saints have a really good problem ahead of them because of how good he's been. They have three bona fide potential starting cornerbacks in Marshon Lattimore, Paulson Adebo, and Alante Taylor. So who's going to be the guy that's going to start opposite Marshon Lattimore so we get to see a very entertaining camp battle? There has been a little bit of stuff around him just in terms of like keeping himself healthy. But hey, once he got on the field last year, he stayed on the field and he participated, played extremely well. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he is able to do in his second year with another full training camp under his belt.
It's no news to people listening and watching right now. Alante Taylor pretty much balled out since the day he got here on campus and grew up right before our eyes, so that's awesome to hear. Ross, what? It's a great time between now and NFL draft time. We got plenty of coverage on the Locked On Podcast Network, NFL mock draft, NFL Locked On NFL. There's tons of stuff that you're a part of and kind of getting ready for this phase of the offseason.
Yeah, absolutely. If you want to hear more love for Hendon Hooker, I'm talking about the guy almost every day. I think he could be the solution to all of the Saints' problems who are, you know, looking for a quarterback. So keeping up with everything going on with that Tennessee Volunteer, as well as future Tennessee Volunteers and past, because we understand how much this team likes that pipeline. So we have all of that over on the Locked On Saints podcast for sure.
Ross Jackson, host of Locked On Saints. As always, man, thanks so much.
Always a pleasure, buddy.
Awesome stuff there. Love talking with Ross and catching up with him. And again, we joke, but that pipeline, it is strong. You've got Marquez Callaway, Alvin Kamara, Alante Taylor, Shy Tuttle, a couple of other ones. I think there's some practice squad players like Bryce Thompson, Ethan Wolf, or Eli Wolf. There's a whole lot of Tennessee to New Orleans love, and there has been over the last couple of years. We'll come back, get another segment here on Locked On Vols, but first I want to tell you about our partners over at FanDuel. The only app you need for the Super Bowl this year, it's FanDuel. That's America's number one sportsbook. Really excited about the new sports betting partner for Locked On because they're the number one sportsbook in America, and that is FanDuel. If you're new to FanDuel, that's even better. They have so many great features that make betting on sports fun and easy. Download the FanDuel app now, and you can bet on Super Bowl 57 with no sweat first bet. You'll get up to $3,000 back in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. FanDuel lets you win on everything from money line to point spreads to who will score touchdowns. FanDuel Sportsbook, it's a safe app, super secure and easy for you to use. And best of all, you get paid instantly. So join FanDuel today at FanDuel.com/lockedon to claim your no sweat first bet on Super Bowl 57. That's FanDuel.com/lockedon. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL.
All right, guys, welcome back into your Tuesday show. That is Locked On Vols, a part of the Locked On Podcast Network. That is your team every single day. Big thanks to Ross Jackson for stopping by. Always enjoy talking with him. He is the one that hired me for this current job I'm in right now here on Locked On Vols, so I appreciate it. Something I want to debut starting today, question of the day. If you look down to the bottom scroller, you will see the question of the day that I have posted on YouTube. Essentially, the question today is, which Tennessee Volunteer will be selected first in the 2023 NFL Draft? All the talk about the Senior Bowl, and we'll continue to break this down and talk about it all up to the draft. But it's kind of funny, I can't remember if I mentioned this on yesterday's show or not, but I mentioned this in some of my other conversations and hits I was doing on Monday and Tuesday of this week. But there are four Tennessee Vols that have been discussed or rumored or positioned or mocked or something about being NFL first-round draft picks. Will all four of them be NFL first-round draft picks? No. Will three of the four? I don't know. Will one of the four? I don't know. Will none of the four? Maybe. I don't know. But the fact that Hendon Hooker has been positioned and looked at potentially late first round, the fact that Byron Young was mocked in the first round by Mel Kiper Jr., the fact that all of Darnell Wright's takeaways from the Senior Bowl say he is a first-round offensive tackle And Jalin Hyatt, who, of course, wasn't a senior, could not partake in the Senior Bowl, but he's about to run at the NFL Combine. He's going to have blazing speed, and he will be all about first-round talk when that happens. The fact that those four guys have been rumored and talked about being first-round draft picks, it's pretty hard to believe. That's kind of wild when you think about it. And, oh, yeah, the other guy that's going to be drafted for Tennessee, at least, is going to be Cedric Tillman, and he's not going to be a low draft pick whatsoever. All right, let's position on over to ESPN.com. ESPN put out their way too early top 2023 newcomer for each team. You look at Georgia, and they put Ra-Ra Thomas. Of course, he's running to some legal issues since going over to Georgia. But Georgia's at number one. That'd be Ra-Ra Thomas. And I think they're taking their way too early top 25 poll, like 1 through 25, and then just adding the player there. So it's not necessarily like Ra-Ra Thomas would be number one, if that makes sense. But number one is Georgia. They have Ra-Ra Thomas. Number two is Ohio State. And it's safety Jahad Carter of Syracuse. Number three is Michigan. Let's see here. Ernest Hausman, who is a linebacker. and then so on and so forth. When you get to Alabama, offensive tackle Caden Proctor. Potentially could be that one. Of course, Jahmyr Gibbs was who that was last year. But you get to Tennessee. Tennessee comes in at number 10. And the list here, or the person that they pick, ESPN picks, for Tennessee to be the top 2023 newcomer is Gabe Judy-Lally. And I'm pretty sure this incorporates signees and all that and the more. This is the description they have on Gabe Judy-Lally, who transfers over from BYU to Tennessee via the transfer portal. Here's it. What ESPN writes, and this is Chris Lowe of ESPN. The Vols did a lot of things well in 2022 on the way to 11 wins in their best season in more than two decades. What they didn't do well was defend the pass. Tennessee was 127th out of 131 FBS teams in pass defense with 289.5 yards per game. That tied for 100th nationally with 22 passes allowed of 30 yards or longer. That is incredible. Let me read that again. 22 passes allowed of 30 yards or longer. Goodness. The Vols need help in the secondary, and they got it with the addition of BYU cornerback Gabe Judy-Lally. He has good size at 6'2", 185 pounds, also has SEC experience. He was at Vanderbilt for three seasons before transferring to BYU and now to Tennessee. The Vols beat out Baylor and UCLA to get Judy-Lally, and will be looking for him to come in and contribute right away in the secondary with several new faces. Tennessee can use all the help it can get when it comes to covering the pass. I'm not sure why it says come in and contribute right away in the secondary with several new faces. There are not several new faces. I mean, if you want to count the signing class, sure, there's five new faces, a freshman, but in terms of who they lost one guy, and that's Trayvon Flowers at safety. To this point, of course, there's another window in the transfer portal that will open up later on in the semester, but that's it for right now. The Tennessee loss in the secondary, but nonetheless, I see what they're saying here with Gabe Judy-Lally. I see what Chris Lowe's saying here and how he can be an immediate impact guy that can help Tennessee. And I would agree with him. The way I would look at the cornerback position right now, was he perfect? No. Did he make mistakes? Absolutely. Was he the best one and has the highest ceiling of anybody that played last year? 100%. That's Danico Slaughter. I would say Danico Slaughter, that's your spot right over there. That's you. And then who? Somebody come earn the other one. Somebody come earn it. Is it going to be Warren Burrell coming back from injury? Is it going to be Kamal Haddon, who, you know, talks more than he plays? Is it going to be Brandon Turnage, who did some things but wasn't consistent and he got hurt a little bit? Is it going to be Gabe Judy-Lally? I would expect, likely, because he has the highest grade per Pro Football Focus, playing over 600 snaps last season for BYU. I think there's a lot of high upside, and I do buy into the SEC experience. It was at Vanderbilt. So, yeah, I could agree with that. Now, is that more important? Is that a bigger addition than maybe a John Campbell on the offensive line? Again, it's the value of the holder, right? So it depends on who you're asking. For Tennessee to be Tennessee, they need their offense to continue to not skip a beat. For that to happen, they have to, you know, have offensive linemen to protect the quarterback and open up holes for the run game and allow passes to get out. For that to happen, you got to replace Darnell Wright. Is John Campbell going to be Darnell Wright? No. But can he supplement losing Darnell Wright? Potentially. Can he step in? He's a guy that's, you know, got loads and loads of college experience. He can play on the left side, on the right side. He's likely coming in to be the right tackle for Tennessee. So John Campbell will be the first one that jumps to mind. What about Keenan Peely, right? A linebacker. Another guy was the teammates of Gabe Judulali at BYU. Tennessee needs another linebacker, another starting linebacker, and that's going to be Keenan Peely, unless, you know, knock on wood here, he doesn't get hurt or anything in spring practice or fall camp. That potentially could be the biggest impact addition to this roster. Could it be McCallum Castles at the tight end position? You guys have heard me say repeatedly how important the tight end position is, and you got to have two in this offense, and you got to hope and pray that, fingers crossed, those guys don't get hurt. Potentially that could be it as well. So it depends on who you're asking. If you can hear my stupid dog barking right now, I apologize. I can hear it. I don't know if the mic is picking it up. Hopefully not. The dog is outside barking right now. Apologies if you can hear it. So annoying. Bad Topher. But Gabe Judulali, that's what ESPN says. And I'm probably on board with that, to be completely honest there. I'm probably on board with that. But there is a discussion. Is John Campbell more important? Is McCallum Castles more important? Is Keenan Peely more important? What's his name? I keep wanting to say Christian Charles, but Christian Charles is a defensive back for Tennessee. Is Charles Campbell, kicker from Indiana that's coming over to be Tennessee's place kicker. Is he the most important? I mean, I know kickers aren't sexy. I know special teams isn't sexy, but boy, you better have a good one. Tennessee had a solid kicker in Chase McGrath the last couple of years. This guy can boot it longer and more consistently. Is he an overall better kicker? I don't know. We'll find out. But that's a big addition for Tennessee. So interesting stuff there from Tennessee and from ESPN in terms of the 2023 way too early most important newcomer for each team. All right, that's going to do it here for this Tuesday show. This is Locked On Vols, and I can't do it without you guys. Thank you so much again. Question of the day. I'm going to try to pose one each and every day here on the offseason. Question of the day. Which Tennessee Volunteer will be selected first in the 2023 NFL Draft? Tweet me in your answers. DM me. Put in the comment section over here on YouTube how you want to answer it. Is it Darnell Wright? Is it still Jalin Hyatt? Could it be Byron Young? Or will Hendon Hooker surprise everybody and be the only one selected in the first round? Maybe the Saints at 29 can get up there and get Hendon Hooker. Let me know who you pick first volunteer to be drafted in the 2023 NFL Draft. All right, guys, that is going to do it. Hey, same time, same place. Let's do it again tomorrow. This is Locked On Vols.